listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being...
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies.
KVD, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. This past weekend, we saw a lot of things that further revealed the proverbial gloves are definitely off. And now the people who took off the gloves seem to be picking up weapons to go after folks. It showed up in the form of the passage of the so-called big, and I don't think it's a beautiful bill, you know, the big ugly bill, where ICE is going to receive more money than the Marines. And who is making up the ranks of these ICE agents is something that I think needs to be discussed and further examined. We saw the marching, or we saw the Patriotic Front marching in downtown Louisville. And we're seeing that type of activity increase. And then we saw some pretty salacious tweets. Donald Trump advisor, who is also an influencer, her name is Laura Loomer, talked about the construction of an alligator prison. Alligator Auschwitz, but it's a detention center built on the Everglades. And we saw the cruelty of this administration when they sought out the biggest crocodile that they could find to put around this in this detention center. If that wasn't bad enough, this woman in question made the remarks that the alligators will have lots to eat, starting with the 65 million people, meaning the population of our Latino brothers and sisters. So we had that. Then we had, I'm forgetting her name, the tall, skinny woman who's always in the news. She used to go out with the comedian, JJ, Jimmy Parker. I'm going to remember her name, but she tweeted out that we had not killed enough indigenous folks and got a lot of retweets and a lot of praise. So we're seeing the gloves are off. We're seeing that people are being more and more overt with their racism. And I wanted to kind of center in on that with somebody who keeps his shoulder to the grind, who has done pitch battles with many of these individuals. And his name is Daryl Lamont Jenkins. So welcome to the show, my brother. How you doing?
Yeah, happy to be back, man. Back to be back.
Yes, and it's good to see you. I know you were down for a minute, but you're back. And
trying to be. I mean, I still have problems with my speech here and there, but I'm going to power through, so to speak.
I hear you on that. Where do we start? I kind of set a stage by talking about some of the more outlandish things. And as I was talking, I'm thinking, maybe the quotes by Laura Loomer and Ann Coulter is who I was thinking about, who said indigenous folks, they hadn't killed enough of them.
Right.
Maybe that was to have our outrage go to them and kind of overlook the fact that the real outrage is in the details of this bill that would have ICE agents be extremely well funded. And then we saw a glimpse of them the other day when they showed up in force at MacArthur Park. I don't think that they were trying to find anybody who was undocumented. They certainly wasn't looking for criminals. I think it was to test the waters and see what they could get away with. But how are you seeing this?
Well, the thing that will always concern me is how we think that we are powerless to stop this. The reason why they are going as far as they are is because we are more or less allowing them in many respects. I mean, first of all, Trump shouldn't even be there right now. Trump should not be in power right now. He should not be in that seat. And we are basically ceding the responsibility to deal with folks like him, with folks who simply don't want, don't seem to be too interested in stopping him. I mean, I'm going to be real. I'm going to tell you right now that I think it's the Democrats that are really the bigger problem than those characters, because they're really not trying to do anything to stop it. No matter, they prefer to go after folks within the party who are trying to. I mean, I was just watching The Daily Show this morning, and Jon Stewart made the point that that kind of nonsense is the reason why Mondami won in New York, and why he may be on way to becoming the New York mayor of New York. And they seem to be putting more effort on trying to keep that from happening than they are from stopping this bill.
Yeah.
And you have to ask why. What it is that in the end you have to ask, are they getting a little bit more out of what's going on in Washington right now than they are with what will be considered their base? And I think we need to understand that if we can't keep complaining and getting angry at what's going on when, first of all, we knew it was going to happen, and two, we are not doing anything about it. I mean, there's so many areas where when you give us the opportunity to, we will do something. But there are people in our way, and they're supposed to be our allies. And we got to start addressing that. We really got to start addressing that.
You know, Daryl Lamont Jenkins, One World, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I remember we had Kali Ankuno on shortly after the election.
Right.
And Kali Ankuno from Cooperation Jackson, and one of the things that he said was pretty similar to you in the sense that he said the Democrats had cut a deal and watch out. And essentially what he got at is that they're going to step back and they're going to let Trump and the MAGA party do the dirty work that either they're afraid to do or incapable of doing. And the dirty work is to get rid of movement folks,
mm-hmm.
get rid of, you know, have communities that tend to organize, be completely distracted and caught up in, you know, the type of battles that are happening now. We saw in the brown community a lot of organizing around immigration with the Dreamers and what have you for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And we saw a type of activism that I think was on trajectory to wake up the quote-unquote sleeping giant of 60 million people. Right. And now, you know, all focus is on ICE, you know, mm-hmm. and what have you. We don't hear about the Dreamers no more. We don't hear about the DACA folks. You know, and these are people that fought some battles to get things to happen.
I look at what happened with Jordan Neely and Daniel Penny up in New York. Right. And I see how much they talked about that case and how and basically the media basically ran to Penny's side and everything, and he ended up getting acquitted. You cut to a couple of months later, and you see a kid, Carmelo Anthony. He is being really attacked by another kid. He protects himself in Texas, stabs him to death. He's up on first degree charges.
And we're talking, and they won't let you see the video.
And they won't let you see the video. But here's the deeper thing: we're talking about it to death online. You know who I'm talking about right now. We have been. I go on TikTok. There's always some sort of chats going on about that case. Mm-hmm. And there's arguments going back and forth on other parts of media. The one place that you don't hear the discussion is on the major news outlets. You don't hear it being talked about like they did Penny on MSNBC. Oh boy,
MSNBC and CNN and all those. Yes.
Yes. And or CNN or anything, maybe Fox will bring it up, because the interesting thing is that the people that are talking about it are the races and such that were really are trying to use that as a I guess a cause sublime for them. And
right,
I mean the first person on the right that started talking about this case, about that case, was a guy. Matt Walsh, who immediately started turning it into a race thing. Then there was a racist rally at that high school that was put together by one of the J6ers.
Wow, and one of the J6ers that got pardoned.
Yeah, his name was Jake Lang. And he put together a White Lives Matter rally, basically.
Right.
And even the father of the kid, I want to say his name was Austin. No, Austin, Metcalf.
Yeah.
Austin Metcalf.
Yeah.
And even his father, they put his father on the phone, and they told him that he didn't want to have anything to do with him. He told him, "Yo, just take my name's, my son's name off your website. You are not respecting him. You are not representing him." And none of this is being talked about on the major news outlets. And you gotta ask why, when they made it such a big deal about what happened with Penny, what is it that they are trying to avoid talking about when you see this case in Texas?
Right, for folks who don't recall, the Carmelo Anthony and the Austin Metcalf case involved a high school student, black kid named Carmelo, who was at a track meet, and it started raining, and he was told to go into a tent, you know, sit under a tent, and that tent happened to be where the Metcalf brothers were, and they were known to be bullies in their area. And they went up to Carmelo, started bullying him. These are two big guys. They're not small. Carmelo himself is small. And as you pointed out, in a stand-your-ground state, where he was about to get beat because they took his phone and some other things, he stabbed one of them. And all hell broke loose after that. And as you pointed out, there were these rallies. At first, initially, they tried to make the young brother be a thug, right? A gangster.
Still doing,
you know,
that.
Right?
Still doing that.
Only to find out that, you know, he's never been in trouble in his life. He's a great student, all these different things. And then, as you pointed out, it became the rally du jour with folks rallying behind the Metcalf brothers. They were twins, you know, so he stabbed one of the twins. And so, again, to your point, yeah, there's been relative silence. And if we look down the road, as you pointed out, the Jordan Neely thing had a lot of, you know, conversation. And even before that, you know, the Trayvon Martin thing did as well. And there's a few other cases. But Rittenhouse is another one. The game plan seemed to be that by talking about these cases, it can manufacture votes. It could bring people under the tent, so to speak. To not talk about this at this point in time, especially something that I think is pretty open and shut, and once those videos come out, from what I'm being told, it's going to be a pretty open and shut case in favor of the guy who is in jail now. It makes me wonder if they don't want to see any sort of activism pick up, if they don't want to see a return to a BLM type of movement where folks start collecting, you know, connecting the dots, because all the time those movements have been about intersectionality. It's been about, hey, if we're talking about this type of injustice, then free Palestine. If we say free Palestine, gay rights. And if we say gay rights, don't ban books. And if we say don't ban books, that means, you know, all these things start to collapse together. And then you have a very vibrant movement, one in which I think the Democrats have found they absolutely can't control anymore. They thought they could, but they can't. They thought they might be able to get that with Kamala, and folks aren't going for it, you know, at the end of the day. It made it clear, like, if you take a position like this, we will not support you on that. And, you know, and to see the type of fervor around trying to stop this mayoral race in New York and see every single Democrat, and they found a bunch of black ones who are in the pocket of AIPAC. They even bought the old governor, David Patterson, out, the first black governor, right? They bought him out the woodwork, man. It's like, let me find him. And these folks are writing statements and putting out op-eds. And I'm bringing this up not to be long-winded, but to your point, Darryl, I want people to look those names up. Mm-hmm. Gregory Meeks.
Absolutely.
Hakeem Jeffries, right? David Patterson. We can go down the list and see if they have that same type of energy or press releases for the big bill and trying to stop its passage, bringing out some of the insidious aspects of it, which include, you know, the funding of ICE. If they were talking about that, rallying up the troops and saying, we all need boots on the ground, let's push this out. I talked to more faith-based leaders who were, you know, organizing phone trees and telling people to call up their rep than it was these reps themselves. But these folks are putting out phone trees and telling you to call everybody to stop Mamdani from becoming mayor in New York. And he won the Democratic primary. So to your point, it stinks to high heavens in Gotham, literally and figuratively. And to Kali and Kuno's point, the established Democrats have cut a deal.
To that particular point, they just recently said that. You know, I'll tell you how. James Garfield, who basically ran Clinton's campaign, was being interviewed, and he basically said he wanted the progressives in the Democratic Party to leave. He said he wanted them out of the party. Come back together, come back. Start your own party, but then come back when it's time for the general election. It's like, that's not how it works, number one. But number two, the bottom line is he wants the progressives out of the party. The other thing he said is that he wanted those that remain in the party, i.e. those who are going to be Democrats and such, in his image, he wants them, while all this is going on with Trump and the Republican Party, to quote unquote play dead. Let them do whatever they want to do.
And, that's right.
And when I read that, I got into a really thick argument over somebody who was like straight up Democrat. but very much so the, he calls himself centrist, but he's actually, you know, more or less conservative Democrat, because that's what centrist Democrats really are.
Right.
He started going back and forth about how the socialists are basically running up, trying to take over everything, and you can't run it, and the progressives are basically scaring everybody. Compared to what Trump is doing, you're talking about how socialists and the progressives are scaring people. People are scared because you're not doing anything, you know. And I think that's one of the things that they are going to learn the hard way, because I do think that Mamdani is going to win. And if he doesn't win, whoever is sitting in that seat instead of him will destroy the whole party, because everybody is going to be angry at that person and everybody behind him. So they're going to have to let this happen. Let me rephrase this. We're going to make sure that this happens. We have to start putting ourselves in positions where we start telling the people who are calling themselves our allies that you will be better allies than you have been. That's just the reality.
The other X factor in this is the Zionist around AIPAC in particular, those type of organizations that have positioned themselves where the centrist Democrats, and I will add many of them very willingly, find themselves having to serve two masters. The masters in the form of the Zionist and that wing of the party, who pretty much said, you know, we will politically make you pay if you don't go along with our agenda. And there's been some casualties to that. You know, Jamal Bowman, Cori Bush, they mm-hmm. said cease fire and found themselves, you know, out of office. We also know when you look back, there was very little fight or support from them coming from the Democrats. They didn't rally around them and say, no, let's make sure they get elected. And you can compare the type of party support that was given to, say, the Blue Dog Democrats when Obama would come out and say, let me support these folks, even though they're not popular with the masses, right? Here, they were on their own, and they lost. And that sent a signal, like, you know, like, get on board, or, you know, you could be next. So instead of negotiating or wavering from a particular position, many of them stayed locked in with whatever their agenda was. And that, of course, is, you know, gotten a lot of people angry, a lot of the coalition that Mamdani and others have built. And so we see that conservative aspect of the Democrats, you know, being powered by or fueled by, you know, the AIPAC side of, if they're even Democrats. I don't know where they stand, because a lot of times they're on the other side of the aisle, but mm-hmm. they definitely have influence in the Democratic Party. And the end game seems like, you know, I'd rather blow up the earth than to have you sit in the seat of power. Like, you're more of a problem than what we're experiencing now. We will allow totalitarianism to take place. We'll allow all the craziness we see with Trump to take place, as long as you get rid of this, you know, wing of people. You can call them progressives, radical, Antifa, all the names that they put, but they don't want that group of people to have any sort of momentum, much less power. And by gosh, you know, I'll burn the whole place down before we allow it to happen. And I think that's the danger.
Also to their detriment, because that's the reason why Kamala Harris lost, because she had less people turning out for her than Biden did.
Yeah.
I mean, if she had the numbers that Biden had, the same numbers, she would be president right now. But she
would have fought a lot harder. When Elon Musk was running around talking about,
that wouldn't have even happened.
Right, right.
That wouldn't have
happened. But you didn't see, yeah, you just, my argument with that had always been, if you're going to bow down to that master, then the deal should be, if you're going to do that, if I support APEC, then Daryl's mm-hmm. crew and Dave's crew and Jan's crew and Wilma's crew and Joe's crew, they're not going to vote for me.
Right.
That's 100 people. So therefore, if you're going to ride with somebody, then you got to ask, can you make up for that loss? Can you bring it?
And they couldn't.
And they did not only, I don't think she asked them, and they didn't bring it.
Oh, no, she not only, she ignored them, I remember one time they were protesting at her event, and she was just basically saying, hey, listen, I'm talking right now. I mean, that.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was really, a lot of it was just the last straw. But then, pay attention to what's going on with Madami. Ali Pak involved with that? They haven't said a word about this campaign. They aren't saying anything about it. Yeah, there are some Democrats that are going after him. Yes, absolutely. But the usual suspects that we are talking about now, they're keeping their own powder dry on that one. They might come after. Now, here's the other thing to bear in mind, too. If and when he wins, they're really going to go after him while he is mayor. We know this because of how they treated David Dinkins 30 years ago, because they went nuts. All of a sudden, every black person, every black voice was an anti-Semitic one in those years. And I remember one time I was listening to a radio show, and they was noticing that the only place that it becomes a thing about black people being anti-Semitic was in New York. It was only happening in New York. And I remember this was a radio show that I was listening to back then. So we was noticing. And then enter Crown Heights, when there was a ride that was going on and that happened in Crown.
I remember in Crown Heights. I remember that it was I think a cab driver hit somebody, one of the Hasidic kids.
No, what happened was there was a funeral, and somebody that was driving, I don't know if it was a hearse or what have you, but they hit a child, black yes. child, and all hell broke loose. And Yanko Rosenbaum was one of the Jewish men that was killed. He was someone who was killed, and it became, again, a rallying cry to stop the pogrom, as if Dinkins had called for this.
Right.
And that's how Giuliani got in in the next election. And he, and Giuliani went in, he just basically made it a war against the black community until 2000, when we actually started pushing back on him after cops killed Diallo.
Right. That was the turning point, the Diallo killing.
Yeah.
You know, Wheeler Avenue, 3 blocks from my old house.
Man.
You know, I remember that. Let me ask you this. Daryl Lamont Jenkins is our guest. I started off by talking about some of these right-wing folks. And, of course, as you pointed out, the Democrats have been absent from that fight, and we can speculate, or we can actually lay down some pretty solid reasons, which I think you've been doing, as to where their energy is at and what this is about. But at the same time, we can't ignore the type of fortress that is showing up. We still need to be aware of these players and the sway they have. I think last time we had you on, we talked about Stephen Miller, who is flexing as a senior advisor in the White House. A lot of the policies that we're seeing, especially around ICE, has his fingerprints on it. The other person is Laura Loomer, who makes these outlandish comments. And normally, I don't care what somebody on TikTok has to say, except she has the ear of the president. So when she's sitting up there making jokes about the alligator Alcatraz and all this other stuff, right, and talking about, oh, yeah, we need to feed, you know, these alligators, 65 million people, you know, it's akin to a cop saying, you know, I think we need to go shoot some folks. You know, it takes on a different type of weight. If it's not a joke when you're saying it, because there's actions that first of all, people are following, and may continue to follow. So with somebody like her at this point, what's the concern, considering the climate that exists, considering the funding of ICE, and the suggestion that people be rounded up and put into these concentration camps?
The concern becomes, who are they connected to? I mean, when you're talking about Loomer, and when you're talking about Miller, you're talking about two Jewish individuals who should know better, who works with white supremacists. And I mean, when he was in college, Miller was friends with Richard Spencer. He used to bring white supremacists to Duke University to speak. A guy by the name of Peter Brimlow. When you talk about Laura Loomer, she associates herself with white supremacists all the time. Nick Francis, who himself is Mexican.
Wow.
And she spoke at a conference just like he did, called the American Renaissance Conference. I've spoken about that conference before, just a couple of years ago. It's a place where basically white supremacists try to put together their political strength. And it was where they got together to organize Charlottesville. A couple of years later, she's speaking at that conference. And who was doing the security for that conference? A group called Patriot Front, who we just saw marching in Louisville, Kentucky. And so you look at all of this, and it's not a conspiracy to say that there are some manifestations that are going on that they hope we don't notice. And unfortunately for them, we do. And the only thing that we have to do is figure out, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to put it down?
Two questions for you, Darryl. One, I know people in your organization and others have long been keeping tabs on some of these folks, not just the ones that make outlandish statements like your Laura Loomers, but folks who are rank and file. And this is why this becomes important, at least to me. With this passing of the budget, I fear that your patriotic front, your militias, your oath keepers, your Proud Boys are suddenly going to be the ones wearing these masks and becoming ICE agents, right, with the full weight of the state. And right now we don't know who they are. I don't know if it's my neighbor down the street, if it's some of the people that post up crazy stuff on Next Door, or if it's you. I don't know.
and that's important to note, because one, they have no business doing that.
Right.
I mean, I heard that Hakeem Jeffries was going to unmask them or something, or demand that they are unmasked. Nothing came of that.
But too little, too late.
Yeah, truly. But the thing is, when we see that happen and people getting rolled up on, we got to be out there, and some folks are, and demand that they identify themselves. Not them ignore us. I mean, absolutely make sure that they identify themselves and unmask. Now it comes to us. It is our safety and our security that we got to start focusing on. Because
but folks like you have already been keeping tabs, and so the question I was going to ask is, are some of those people that you've been keeping tabs, have they moved into ICE?
Well, there has been rumors, but we can't say for sure.
We honestly cannot say for sure. We do know that police have an interesting relationship with the Proud Boys, for example. And you have to remember that a lot of them were already cops, were already military folks before the bill came into fruition. So we've already had this problem. It's just amplified now. Mm. It's just very much so amplified. But this is where we have to start insisting. We got to be out there just as hardcore as the Palestinians are. We got to be out there. I have a big issue with some of us on this side, and we were talking about this a couple of days ago, about this whole thing about the "it's not our fight" routine.
Well, yeah, let's address that a little bit.
Yeah.
I think there are some people who have taken that position, but the amount of presence that they have online, mm-hmm. where people who I don't follow, you know, I don't go to their websites ever, but they're the first thing I see on my feed, giving long statements about this is not our fight. And now they've been pivoting to blaming everything from the low attendance at the Essence Festival to other things on the fact that it's not fundamentally Black Americans. It's somehow the fault of Africans and Haitians and Jamaicans and all these folks. So they started off saying that what was happening with ICE is not our problem, you know, stand down. And a lot of that was coming from places on the West Coast, out of LA in particular, where, you know, there's been gang tensions that have existed for decades with certain gang factions, and I think that's spilt over. The problem with it is that ICE was going equally hard on Black folks back east where you're at. You know, mm-hmm. your Philadelphias and all that. ICE ain't running up on Mexicans. They're running up on Haitians, Jamaicans, and everybody else. And I think the outlandishness of ICE as it begins to pick, as it picks up, you can't ignore it. Even if CNN is not showing those faces, there's enough people in the community to go, you do know that ICE is up here, you know, in little Haiti in Miami and bashing on Black folks. And some of us are getting caught up. So now the pivot has been to now focus your animosity on the Black immigrant and then take this position that somehow they're diluting the culture, they're somehow weakening us, and all this sort of stuff that from the research that I found are coming off of sites that are being powered by white folks. They might have some Black faces speaking, but when you look mm-hmm. at the, you know, we were talking about some of the, you know, type of conversations that when you start to engage them, you realize, like, wait a second, I don't even think I'm talking to somebody Black at this point. And now we're starting to see influencers who have been in the mm-hmm. right wing, you know, who are now espousing that line. I get all that. My main focus is, at this point, not even on them, but it's Mark Zuckerberg yeah. and it's Elon Musk and whoever, because they're now allowing something to be blatantly prejudiced, blatantly incendiary, blatantly in violation of their terms of service to be amplified. Because God knows, if I came up there and started saying something about Jews on behalf of Palestine, they would stifle my feed, they would cut it off, they would kick me off, suspend me for 30 days, all that sort of stuff. But now I can get on there and have somebody go, it's the Haitians and Jamaicans who are messing up the Essence Festival, and you know, and you can say all this crazy stuff about a group of people. Just because you have a Black face doesn't give you a license to get away with it, because your Black face couldn't say Free Palestine, and they weren't letting right. that fly. So then why is Zuckerberg allowing this to proliferate on his sites unchecked when everything else is shut down? And that's who I think the enemy is at this point.
Yeah, and it wasn't, like you said before, it wasn't always that way. I mean, this is one of the reasons why we have to build our own platforms. That's what we learned after Elon took over Twitter.
X. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even call it that. I mean, I'll deadline Twitter to death, literally. So I think once that happened, all the other social media outlets felt, okay, so we can go ahead and let the N-word fly here and all of this.
Yeah.
And we can, and I'm just going to stay on this theme. We can either keep complaining about it or do something about it. We can build our own social networks. We can do that. We can build our own websites, period. We started off doing that. I have three.
Right.
I don't want anybody stifling my voice because they don't like what I'm saying. So I have my own websites. That's right. That's what we need to do. That is what we are going to have to do. And we did do it. There are websites that we can go to. And it's just a matter of letting people know that you're over there and so such on. I'm about to go on Substack. I mean, it may not be 100%, but by the same time, I think that I can utilize that a lot better than I can.
A lot of people are on there, and that's been a welcome. That's been a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, I just got on it yesterday. Literally. Like,
there's a lot of folks on there. W. Kamau Bell, big shout out to him, has been pretty visible. Robert Reich is on there. So a lot of folks are on there. And yeah, you don't have the stifling that has been occurring in these other places, which, you know, is very intentional, very deliberate, and it's in line with keeping information from the masses. And keeping people distracted, and then, you know, we having to decipher some of these things. I keep accounts in all those places, and I definitely do my monitoring of what's going on in the X's and the Facebooks and screenshot and download, do all these things that you all talked about. So we have files, so we know, like, okay, Jim Jones said this, you know, 2 weeks ago. Let's make sure we understand that this is who they are, this is who they support, and this is what they're about. Because those folks will come sauntering back into the community later on with a different face, you know, different persona, different handle, and will wreak havoc under another name, and we need to know who they are. But I want to come back to what you said as we kind of locked down, Daryl. You said that even though they seem to have a lot of power, we can't allow ourselves to be defeated. We can't hand that over. Like, they can be defeated is your mantra, and you've always said that. How do you do that when it seems so overwhelming right now?
Remember that what our strengths are. I mean, we're able to sit here and talk about it right now. I mean, what we have to do, I think the next step is figure out how we turn that into application. And it was one of the reasons why I brought up the thing about, you know, confront the ICE agents when you see them. I remember Holman saying that they had a hard time in Chicago.
They had a hard time in Brooklyn. The Haitian community was like, they formed up, posse'd up, and Voltron'd them on out of there.
So that's the thing that we know that that's effective. Especially if we just, I mean, eventually they'll figure out a way to come at us all again, but we just got to keep on pushing. And because if we don't, we're going to end up finding ourselves dead, locked up, and without ever broken a law. I mean, we are at the point that we have always complained about, that we was always scared of. And now it's time for us to step up. So in that regard, when we talk about what kind of actions can we do? Okay, one, we talk. Two, what kinds of things can we do in real time that will protect our communities and other communities effectively. We have to have that discussion. We can't just keep on having discussions about how bad things are. How do we change it? How do we get the people that we want in power in those seats? We don't want any more Schumers. We do not want any more disappointments like Jeffries. I gotta say it like that. He breaks my heart. I'm sitting here looking at what's going on in New York. Gotta get rid of people like Richie Torres.
Right.
Really gotta get rid of him. And we gotta get Cori Bush back, and we gotta get
Jamal Bowman.
Jamal, I was on a show with him at one time, and I was talking with him, and he was on point. That's why he's not there anymore. But the fact is, he's still out there.
Yeah.
And I'm really gonna get hardcore and say, maybe it's time to start looking at the third parties and start giving them some strength. Now they got to really step up themselves too and give us a reason to vote for
remember
them.
Remember, in New York, it was the Working Families Party. Now, of course, they'll operate under the Democratic thing, but they're a party, you know? I mean, and maybe we don't have to necessarily reinvent the wheel. They got chapters. They got a politic that I think aligns, and they might be something to start strengthening, or at least asking, you know, what needs to be strengthened versus just coming up with something brand new, which everybody does every 4 years, and then it just, you know, never gains traction. They've been doing it for a while now.
Well, I think it was really interesting also in Minnesota or Michigan, or how the Democrats had to have commercials against the Green Party. They were scared about something. Yeah. So I think really it is a case. Working families.
Families,
yes,
party.
Yes, they were all over the place. They still are all over the place. Great, love them. But I think now it's really time for them and other groups to really start asserting themselves and stop being paper tigers. If we need alternatives, show why they need to start showing people why they should be the alternative, because we're looking for them. They know we're looking.
Right.
So it's time for them to put themselves up there.
Well, you know, we will reach out and grab some of those folks on, get them on the show and see where they're at. And probably, you know, they're folks are on the list to at least continue the breakdown of New York. You know, like that Avengers movie, the famous one where the battle in New York that they reflect.
Yes, the thing that started it all
and gave them that franchise. I think this battle in New York is now
nice
in real
analogy that you just put up, though. Everything started blowing up after New York.
Right, and the Avengers movie, yeah.
And then Thanos came along and wiped out half of the
world.
And then we came back and brought it back. That's what we're doing over the next 10 years. We got to be prepared for the Democrats to wipe out all of us.
Or
but
half.
They won't.
Yeah.
It's a nice, I like that analogy. you can't do things like that to a comic book kid. You can't do that to me.
Yeah, but you know that if you think about it, that was always the pivot. They go back, and I say very seriously, what is going to happen in New York is going to be extremely important, because what you're seeing is a fault line around the established Democrats, and they're putting all their chips in on the table. The Schumers, the Meeks, all those folks. I'm sure they're going to pull out Obama, you know, at the 11th
he'll be
hour
there. He'll be there.
To say that Madami should not be in, and you know they're doing everything they can, divide and conquer, the whole nine. And because, as you said, if either way they lose, first of all, I agree with you.
I think if you win, you lose, and
if you lose, you still lost.
I mean, I take it. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, pass this prologue, because they did this to Ed Lamont in Connecticut, who's now the governor, when he was running for the Senate against Lieberman, who was entrenched. And he beat him in the primary. Lieberman went third party and won.
Yeah, I remember that.
Then he only had one term before he was gone. Yeah. Did the same thing in Buffalo. The socialist candidate for mayor, I believe her name was India or something like that. She won the primary. She beat the mayor. He went third party, or rather went independent or something, and ended up winning the general. He didn't even last the rest of his term. So that's what we're going to be seeing if Mandama loses.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've already warned them that they will fail. Yeah, but the trick is to make sure that they care that they lose.
Daryl Lamont Jenkins, we appreciate you coming on. How can people get a hold of you?
I'm always you can always find me at onepeoplesproject.com. That's my organization, Dr. One People's Project. IdaVox, which is named after Ida B. Wells.
Yes.
And that's IdaVox.com. And that's where you'll find a whole bunch of news stories related to fighting fascism, basically. And you can also find me online, Instagram at D. Lamont Jenkins. I cannot even remember my Blue Scott. but I'm on it regularly.
Yeah.
But you can find me there too. And yeah, I'm on Facebook as well as...
We usually do a write-up of the show, so when we do, we'll put all those in the link.
Yeah, I can get you all of that.
And we appreciate you. We got to bounce on out of here. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We're out for now. Peace.
Hard Knock. Turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program. Turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man. Chris Juwan Kim. Yeah. Innovation. Stimulating ill conversation. Anything else is just imitation. Simulation. Step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio. Let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D. Yeah, right. Feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kind of crazy though. Oakland stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble Big Now Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on.
Check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't gone all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats trying to eat it and any from the steel grave beats they bleed. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Says the beast and the lovers I name with a please. Hey, there's some shade on
Real Talk Radio. You are now rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast. Dance
out. In the realm of the airwaves, where the truth does spin.
Hard Knock Radio takes the mic. Let the dialogue begin.
From the heart of the culture, where the beats do sway.
Hip hop, pop, politics, and culture
rule the day.
Rock it on your radio.
Hard Knock, rock it on your radio.
Hard Knock, rock it on your radio.
Speaking truth to power.
Hard Knock, rock it on your radio.
Radio takes the mic, let the dialogue begin.
From the heart of the culture, where the beats do sway.
Hip hop, pop, politics, and culture
rule the day.
Rock it on your radio.
Hard Knock, rock it on your radio.
Hard Knock, rock it on your radio.
Speaking truth to power.
Hard Knock, rock it on your radio. Hard Knock, rock it on your radio.
Speaking truth, power.
Hard Knock, rocking on your radio. Hard Knock, rocking on your radio.
K-Boo.
This is Rascal Dispatch. I'm Althea Billings. This summer, I'm on sabbatical from my community radio job. Here's what I've been up to. I'm headed to New York City to visit two dear friends of mine, Emma and Peter. They're college friends who've turned into long-distance ones. I last came to visit them 2 years ago. I'm stoked to see them, but I wonder how things will feel after so much time apart. The first few days, I'm staying at Emma's place. We met working on our college newspaper in my freshman year. Emma was, and I guess still is, 2 years older than me, and we were hired as co-features editors. When we first met and became friends, I was in awe of how cool Emma was. She seemed to me to be totally herself, fully expressed. She's smart, funny, and very creative. When I get to her apartment, a few things seem familiar. A green velvet couch I recognize from a few apartments ago. The last time I stayed with Emma, I slept on it one night after seeing a cockroach and freaking out about it. Emma's also carrying this water bottle, the same one she carried in college and on a trip to Europe we took. It's a metal one with fading blue paint, and the bottom of it is so dented that it won't stand up straight, so she rests it on its flat wooden cap. I also note the Valentine I sent her is on the fridge. I love going to my friends' houses and seeing how they adorn their life, what bits and bobs spoke to them, what photos and messages made it onto the refrigerator. We spent some time going through her place, a railroad apartment in Prospect Heights. Nowadays, Emma's in grad school and teaching part-time. We spend an afternoon at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. We walk through the costume gallery exhibit, and we get turned around in 19th century European paintings as we're trying to go see the knight's armor on the first floor. We stop in front of a reproduction of Edgar Degas' sculpture of the 14-year-old dancer. I start telling Emma about this wacky internet theory that Degas was actually Jack the Ripper when...
Crazy that he just touched the skirt, by the way.
I see that. I saw that.
did the skirt.
A kid around the age of 13 fluffs the ballerina's skirt. We get lost in more rooms of more paintings. Emma wonders about other macabre art elements, namely mummy brown, a paint color made from ground-up mummies. Later, we head to Peter's for dinner. Outside the subway stop is a guy in a bulletproof vest, and on his shoulder is a pink rat wearing a Puerto Rican flag as a cape. No time to analyze that. Emma and I are caught in subway rush hour, and we're treated to two finance guys having a conversation a foot above our heads about
fostering your relationships for like an hour each Friday.
Because
low-key, no one is doing that.
It's hot and humid in New York, seemingly some of the first of the season, because my friends haven't put their AC units in the window yet. You're sticky all the time. There's no avoiding it. But everyone is, so there's no shame in it either. You're sweaty, I'm sticky, none of this is getting resolved until I take a cool shower and go to bed to do the same thing again tomorrow. Okay, Peter's house. Peter lives on the third floor of this gorgeous old building in Clinton Hill. We also met working at the college newspaper and ran the whole thing together for a time. Peter's a thoughtful, smart guy who's also thoroughly silly. And as it turns out, a great cook. He whipped up a cabbage salad in a noodle dish like that while Emma and I rested our weary feet. I share some of my stockpile of Sunday crosswords that I get from my friend Ray.
Jaron's spinach is one you should have gotten, I'm sorry. Now we'll shut up.
No, go ahead.
Later in the week, I help proof his essay for this fellowship he's applying for. After college, he worked in publishing, then horticulture and indoor gardening, and now he's headed to law school. Smart guy, what'd I tell ya? I'm sort of flattered to read the essay, since I think of Peter and Emma as being on another level when it comes to writing. On my last full day in New York, we go to Coney Island with a gaggle of friends. It's breezy and a bit gray. Okay, maybe a little more than breezy. It's windy, which Emma discovered after we polished off a funnel cake.
It was the plate full of extra funnel cake powdered sugar lifted by the wind, smacked her in the shoulder and the face. Highly dramatically.
And then the plate fell behind, so I went to go get it, and the guys really freaked out like I was some sort of celebrity and made me take a selfie with them because I was covered in powdered sugar and they all were laughing so hard at me.
We go on the Ferris wheel and explore. Emma wins a crane game and we both get airbrush tattoos. We go for a second round of hot dogs as the wind picks up again.
I can now say with complete honesty that I do have that dog in me and it feels really good.
Back home, I find my eyes drawn to Peter's refrigerator. When I last stayed with him 2 years ago, I was giving him grief about the lack of personality on his fridge. Now, there's significantly more stuff on there, including a magnet I made and sent to him. Like at Emma's house, I find a bit of comfort and shock in seeing my own handwriting in someone else's home. I mean, maybe there shouldn't be. I like mailing cards and zines to my friends. But especially with long-distance friends, that marks something. I'm still a person to you when we're away from each other. And when you come to my house, you'll see the postcard you sent me is pinned up, and that bowl you gave me is in a place of honor. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for listening to Rascal Dispatch.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Hey there, KBOO listeners. This is Dr. Tony Zimbardi, host of the new show, Radical Romance. Radical Romance is an